in case you're wondering what happened this week, I came in on Thursday and my rainbow was all on the floor. So I started to put it back up and then decided I had to take it down anyway for the season of prayer, so I just kind of left it down. So if you're wondering what happened to all the colors on the wall, they literally gave up the ghost. I think it's the change of the season, the humidity, the sticky tack let loose of the walls, so we're okay without it. But if you're just getting here, this might be a little confusing to you, but what we're actually studying is we're studying the Beatitudes right now. These are those eight basic statements that kind of give us a recipe for happiness. They're not easy lessons, they really aren't. And you know, maybe you're starting to figure out that, well, maybe you're not satisfied, maybe you're not happy with your Christian life because, well, you've just flat out taken the wrong approach to happiness. See, as we've been looking at this, we figured out that if we're going to live a happy, committed life, if we're going to live a satisfied Christian life, the first thing we're going to have to do is be humble. Then we're going to have to become a little dependent on God. We're going to have to learn how to mourn during difficult situations so that God can comfort us. We're going to have to learn some meekness. We're going to have to learn to take the outside that people see, and we're going to have to make it so that people actually see that God is living in us with a meek attitude. Last week we talked about the idea of being in need, that we need to hunger and thirst for righteousness. And well, this week we get to merciful. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. And I have a big confession to make. Me teaching a lesson on mercy is kind of like a butcher teaching a lesson on how to enjoy vegetables. I mean, it just doesn't work very well in my life. I have mercy issues in my life. My son is constantly reminding me, you know those little spiritual gifts assessments that you take every now and then to see what your spiritual gift is? Mercy? I scored a 2. That's out of 100. Okay, I struggle with this concept of mercy. And so here we are though. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. And I look at this and I have to think, poor Bing Bong. Now if you don't know who Bing Bong is, that's okay. That means you haven't seen the movie, but trust me. By the way, the movie comes out on the 3rd and we're contemplating doing a movie night. We're following that little movie Inside Out. We're contemplating doing an Inside Out movie night so we can come here and watch the movie you've been watching clips from. But Bing Bong is Riley's imaginary friend. All the way back from the inside of her days, there was Bing Bong as her little imaginary friend. And well, Bing Bong's kind of been forgotten. When joy and sadness lost their way, they found Bing Bong wandering around the corridors of Riley's long-term memory. But the thing is that, well, he still loved Riley. He refused to let it go, so he was just kind of wandering around looking for a space to belong. Well, along come joy and sadness. Of course, Bing Bong had wandered around so long that he knew exactly how to get to where they would need to go, so he kind of became their guide on how to get happy and joy back, happiness, joy, sadness back to Riley, where she needs it to be. And well, he had this special rocket. And it was a rocket that was activated by a very annoying song, and I'm not going to attempt to sing it for you, but he had this very annoying song that they would sing, him and Riley would sing it, and it made the rocket fly. And him and Riley would go on all of these wonderful adventures, but he left the rocket in the wrong place. And well, the people that come and clean up Riley's brain, the little creatures that go through there, took the rocket and shoved it into the pit of forgetfulness. You saw him, right? He cried out for mercy. He wanted them to stop. He didn't want to see the rocket get destroyed, but over the edge it went. And well, did you notice what happiness wanted to do? It'll be okay. Let's just move on. Let's just forget about that. Let's get back on the right track here. Let's not forget what the mission is. Let's tickle you to make you feel better. Let's make strange faces at you. Let's just try to be happy. It's because she's got the wrong recipe. Joy didn't understand mercy. But I think sadness got it. There was Bing Bong sitting on the edge of that cavern and his whole life was about to end because he wanted to know, was Riley done with me yet? So So Sad just sat down and had a little conversation with him, allowed him to cry, showed him a little compassion, and allowed him to move on. And you know, I don't think this is much different from our lives, because I think a lot of us, they have the little pink elephant inside of us, the little big long creature. I think a lot of us inside of us, you know what? We too have cried out for mercy. Don't believe me? Let's just take a walk through Psalms and look at David. David cried out, "Deliver me," in Psalms 26:11. "I led a blameless life. Deliver me and be merciful to me." That's what David said. He wanted God to bring him out of the situation. He demanded of God to answer me. "Hear my voice when I call, Lord. Be merciful to me and answer me." We all want those times when we think we have God's undivided attention. We want to hear God's answer quickly and decisively. We've cried out to God, "Help me." Psalm 30:10 says, "Hear, Lord, be merciful to me. Lord, be my help." We all want God to fix our issue, to bring things back into perspective. We desire God's mercy. I know we've all cried out this one, "Relieve me, God." Psalm 31:9. "Be merciful to me, Lord, for I am in distress." Boy, been there, done that, haven't we? "My eyes grew weak with sorrow, my soul and body with grief." God, just be merciful. Take away these emotions, Lord. We've cried out, "Save me," before. "Be merciful to me, my God, for my enemies are in hot pursuit. All day long they press their attack." And of course, the one that usually we cry out to God in our deepest, darkest moments is, "Don't forget me." Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has he in anger withheld his compassion? You see, we all kind of talk to God in the same way that Bing Bong bemoaned the fact that his rocket got pushed off the edge. We had a life that was all planned out. We had a life that we thought we were going to live. And, well, things happen. They really did. Bad things happen to good people. It just happens. Life doesn't always go the way you planned it. The hour doesn't always go the way you planned it. And, well, sometimes we're in need of a little mercy. We are. Even though I may not deserve it, even though my best laid plans weren't very good plans, we need somebody to be merciful. So we sit on the edge of our lives in our broken state and we cry out, "Lord, where's the mercy? Where is that which I need to make my life work, Lord?" And well, I gotta kind of tell you, there's a mercy reality. You see, there are some things that we need to know about mercy, because somehow I think we've got the wrong perspective. I mean, I could give you examples. If you're riding down the interstate and you are driving 75 miles an hour, and you look up and the little blue lights are in your rearview mirror and you pull over, which do you want, mercy or justice? Yeah, you want mercy, right? Mercy's a good thing at that point. When you're sitting in the parking lot, the one without the stoplight, and the traffic is lined up bumper to bumper, which do you want? Mercy? Can somebody make a gap for you to get out? Or do you want justice? They're already in the flow of traffic. It's their traffic. Which one do you want?
Mercy.
We want mercy, right? Now, let's reverse the roles here a little bit, and let's say you're the one that's in the traffic, and you're a little bit late, and you're sitting there bumper to bumper, and the guy's sitting in the parking lot. Which one do we usually think about?
Justice.
Because I am in the flow of traffic. I am the one that's controlling here, and you know what? My life is more important than your life. You see, that's the reality. That's the way that we want to be mercy. Mercy is great when I am the recipient. Mercy is not so much needed when I am the person that has to give it. Isn't that the way it works? Isn't that the reality? What if God took that approach? What if God took the approach that I would rather you give me mercy than I have to show it to you? What if God said, I only give you mercy when I feel like it?
Would be in trouble.
Oh, yeah, that would not work well, would it? We'd be sitting in that parking lot for an awful long time because you know what? God doesn't need our mercy. You see, the reality is that God is indeed merciful. In his nature, God is merciful. Listen to these verses. Psalm 78:38 says, yet he was merciful. He forgave their iniquities and did not destroy them. Time after time, he restrained his anger and did not stir up his full wrath. You know what strikes me in that verse? Time after time. He didn't stop giving them the mercy after the first time. He didn't stop after the second time. He said that he withheld his wrath. He provided them mercy over and over and over. That's the nature of mercy. Daniel 9:9 says, The Lord our God is merciful and forgiving, even though we have rebelled against him. That's what Daniel 9:9 says. Even though I walked out on God, even though I left God, even though I turned my back on him, he shows me mercy. That's incredible. But that's the nature of God. Nehemiah 9:31 says, but in your great mercy you did not put an end to them or abandon them, for you are a gracious and merciful God. God doesn't leave you sitting on the side of your cliff when your life is broken. God's kind of like sadness was in that cliff. He sits down beside you. He wants to talk to you about the issues. He wants you to understand that he is indeed merciful. And I got to tell you, that gives me that little warm, fuzzy feeling inside of me that God shows mercy even when I am at my worst. God can be at his best. Merciful. And it gives me the warm, fuzzy because the second part of the reality is that we need God's mercy. We really do. This is what the Apostle Paul writes in Romans chapter 11, verses 30 through 32. Just as you who were at one time disobedient to God have now received mercy as a result of their disobedience, so that they too have become disobedient in order that they too may receive mercy as a result of God's mercy to you. For God has bound everyone over to disobedience so that he may have mercy on them all. You see, if I am left to my own persuasion, I know what I can be like. You remove the constraints on me, and I know what my life would probably be like. I understand that verse that Paul says, but for the grace of God, there go I. I know exactly the paths that I have walked in the past, and I understand the power of God's mercy because I don't walk those paths anymore. At least not on a regular basis. I have my struggles just like everybody else. You see, there was a point in my life when I began to understand I need some mercy. I need God to do something in my life that is different, that I don't deserve, that I have earned something quite different. I need God to roll it all back and have two sides of the same coin. Give me a little grace. Show me some mercy. You see, because we want God's mercy, don't we? I use those examples of when we should have mercy. Well, this is what we want from God. Hebrews 4:16. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help them in our time of need. To help us in our time of need. You see, we go to God, and this is kind of what we want from God, right? I want to be able to bring God what's wrong with my life, what's broken in my life, and what's busted in my life. I want to bring God the relationships I'm struggling with. I want to bring him the bad days, and I want to approach his throne and say, God, pour it out on me. Come on, God. Come on, I've had a really tough week. How about a little grace and mercy? We want to approach God in that way because we understand that, well, we want God's mercy. We want to feel God's loving arms flow around us during those difficult times so that we can get through them without so much struggle. We desire mercy. And that's all well and good until we get to Matthew chapter 5 where he says, "Blessed are the merciful, for they are merciful, for they will receive mercy," because you know what? He expects me to be merciful. He says in Luke chapter 6, verse 36, he doesn't make any bones about it. He says, "Be merciful just as your Father is merciful." So all of that mercy that I am pleading for from God, all of that grace that I want God to give me, now Jesus is saying, you know what? That's the key to happiness. That's what will do it for you. If you want to experience true mercy, then you have to be willing to give true mercy. And I struggle with that. I have a computer background, and you know in computers there is no mercy, right? It's a zero or it's a one. It's an on or it's an off. You push the button, it works or it doesn't. There is no in the middle. One of the best teachers I have in college, her name was Mrs. Janet Dunford. First day you walk into her college class, she said, "By the way, I don't give B's, C's, or D's. I have two grades, A or F. If it works, you get an A. If it doesn't, you get an F." Oh my gosh. There was no mercy. There was no grading on the curve. She had a standard that you had to live by. And you know what? It's funny. I worked very hard in that class because I understood if I wanted to pass it, that A was the only option. And now here's God telling me, "Barry, if you want to experience my mercy, if you want to experience the blessings that come from mercy, then you're going to have to learn how to be merciful." Yuck. That doesn't sound like the way to make myself happy. That sounds like the way to make myself frustrated. But here's what you know. This wasn't just one of those things that Jesus said off the cusp and he didn't mean it. He really meant it. He tells a story in Matthew chapter 18, verses 23 through 35. We've studied the story before. It's called the story of the unmerciful servant. And the way the story goes is there is this servant that has found himself indebted to the king. And he owes thousands upon thousands, maybe even as much as $1 million to the king. And the king calls him in front because the king is settling up the books. And you know what this guy is thinking? My goose is cooked. I'm a dead man because I can't pay back the king. And so the king brings him in front of there and he says, "Hey, you got this big debt on your books, on my books. You owe me a lot." And he pulls out the pencil and he goes like this. "Debt's forgiven." Oh my gosh. I've never felt what it feels like to have somebody relieve me of $1 million debt, and I never intended to, but that probably felt pretty good, didn't it? To have a debt that there is no way I could pay it, no way possible, imagine that I could come up with, and have somebody just cross that debt off. That would have been a very good move for the rest of the day. At least one day, maybe even two. But that's not how this worked. This servant goes out, and he's walking down the street, and he sees a fellow servant that owes him to what amounts to about $20. And he sees this fellow servant, and he grabs him, and he shakes him, and he demands his $20. And when the other servant can't come with $20, he calls the police and has the guy thrown in jail. Man, I just got relieved of $1 million worth of debt. You think I could get over $20? But the servant couldn't. So the servant that could not relieve the debt of $20 was called back before the king. And in verse 23 it says, "Shouldn't you have mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you?" Well, now there's a thought. Ponder just for a second how much God has forgiven of you. If you had to sit down and write every sin that you've committed from the time you were a little child until just today, and you had to sit down and write them all, How many notebooks would you need? How long would it take you to write down every single solitary transgression you've ever made in your entire life? I know what I would be doing for the rest of my life. Just writing. But God forgave it all through Jesus' sacrifice. And now in this story, he's saying, those who have been forgiven much, shouldn't you just be able to forgive this one itty bitty little thing? Now, I often wonder, you never hear the servant say a word. The one that is just standing there, before, he never gives an excuse. He never makes a rationalization. He is just silent. But the king's not. In verse 34, it says, in anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. How would you like to have that debt reinstated? How would you like to have your sin debt reinstated and God to give you a list of rules and regulations on how you are to work that debt off? And that's what you're going to have to do until the day it's all covered. Of course, the problem is the way we work is as we're paying for those debts, we're probably going to commit some more sins and we would spend the rest of our life just looking for God's mercy. And that's kind of harsh. And that brings this little statement that says, be merciful just as I have shown you mercy. That kind of puts a new spin on it, doesn't it? When Jesus says, blessed are those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. You realize the other catch of that is, don't you? Those who are incapable of showing mercy may not understand what it means to have been shown mercy, because they may never have received the actual mercy they think they got. Because it kind of flows through your life. Mercy. So I want to ask you, how are you at showing mercy? Now I told you I scored a 2 on that mercy test. The good news is, that's for the spiritual gift of mercy. And I know I will never have the spiritual gift of mercy. I'm just not cut from that cloth. That's okay. I have my other spiritual gifts. I'm not talking about the super merciful thing. I'm just talking about how can I just be normal merciful in my everyday life. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you some things to consider here. Because God thinks us being able to show mercy is important. So that means I better learn how to show some mercy. And so I've got some things that maybe will help us. We're going to try to cultivate a little mercy in our lives. It's really quite simple. It's not as hard as you might think it is. The first thing you have to do, though, is, well, mercy requires us not to judge. This is what James chapter 2, verses 12 through 13 says. Speak and act as those who are going to be judged by the law that gives freedom, because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful. Mercy triumphs over judgment. That means if I'm going to cultivate mercy, I've got to take my opinions about people and put them on the back burner. It means when I see the person in distress, I need to stop worrying about how they got there. Why are they standing on the side of the road with that sign? It doesn't matter. What went wrong in their life that caused them to have these problems? It doesn't matter. Because mercy trumps judgment. If I'm ever going to learn how to be merciful, I have got to first learn now not to judge. Jesus reinforces this in Matthew chapter 7, verse 2. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. With the measure you use, it will be measured to you. See, we don't like people to judge our lives. We don't, do we? We want people to just let us get away with whatever. But man, don't we like to be the judge? And if I'm going to have mercy, I am going to have to learn how not to always be the judge. I'm just going to have to sometimes take a few things at face value and begin to show a little mercy. But not only does it require me not to judge, there's another step to this. Mercy requires empathy. Now I want you to pay close attention to the word. I did not say apathy. You can't take the I don't care attitude if you're going to be mercy. It also doesn't say sympathy. You can't just feel bad for the person. Joy in that clip felt bad that Bing Bong's rocket got crushed. But in the end, who was still Joy's focus? Joy. Sadness also felt bad that the rock had got crushed. But who was Sadness's focus? Bing bong. That's empathy. Not only can you not judge them, you have to allow yourself to relate to their situation. You have to just not feel bad about it. You have to be willing to do something about it. This is what it says in Hebrews chapter 2, verse 17. For this reason he had to be made like them, he being Jesus, fully human in every way, in order that he might become merciful and faithful high priest in the services to God, that he might make an atonement for the sins of people. It's funny the way Jesus had to give mercy to us. He couldn't do it from heaven. Did you ever catch that? If you go back and you read in the Old Testament where God is talking and God is showing and God is doing and God is in heaven and the people are down here, there is some mercy there, but usually we don't associate mercy with Old Testament, do we? It isn't until Jesus shows up on the scene and here he is living the human life, doing the human thing, that we begin to understand that God understands mercy because he walked in our shoes. He sat on the cavern beside us and we realize he understands the situation and he had a plan. It requires a little empathy. Sometimes you're going to have to put your life on hold and sit on the side of the cavern with him. Mercy requires patience. Oh man, really? This is what it says. Be merciful to those who doubt. Save others by snatching them from the fire. To others, show mercy mixed with fear, hating even the clothing stained by corruptible flesh. We're going to have to deal with people's questions and their disbelief and their doubt, and it isn't going to happen overnight. If I'm going to be merciful, it means I might have to do the same thing more than once. I may have to explain it again tomorrow, even though I just explained it to you yesterday. And you know what? There's a good chance I might have to explain it the day after that again. Mercy requires us to be patient with people. And if that really bothers you, just remember, you're a people. And whether you think it or not, somebody has to be patient with you. There are people that are investing in your life and investing in your life in the past. And you know what? They had to be patient with you. Because I'm guessing you didn't get it the first time. And so if we're going to have mercy, we're going to have to become a patient people. Mercy requires sacrifice. Now it's getting kind of personal. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in the view of God's mercy, to offer your body as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. See, if I'm going to be merciful, it's going to cost me something. It might be time, because I let the person in the parking lot out in front of me, and maybe even the next person after that, the next person after that, I don't know. If I'm going to be merciful, it might actually cost me some resources. It might cost me, I don't know, anything God wants, right? Because he's given me everything. See, that's what mercy requires, but you need to understand mercy is for the merciful. Now, I'm going to swipe this little microphone. I like to come up front and talk for just a minute. And I know the other one is dead. And Matt's now wondering which microphone is he grabbing, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. Well, sitting on top of the seat, I'm not going to grab it. I'll just do it this way. I'll stop right here today. So, mercy for the merciful. This is an important idea. Because somehow I think we've got it all figured out and we've got it all thinking that the way this works is I come forward and I say a little prayer and I get dunked in a tank and then I go out and I just try to live a good life. And you know what? How I relate to other people matters very little. Do you realize that out of these 8 statements, this is the 3rd one that reflects on dealing with other people? Oh. So how I relate to other people, how I treat other people after I have accepted Christ is just as important as all the other things. Just as important as saying a prayer, getting dunked in the tank. How I live the life going forward is important. And so if on that day when I am standing before God
and it is my day, and I am standing there, and he is asking me the question, why should I let you into my heaven? And I want to scream for mercy. If he's put it in the scripture this way, would he not be just in looking at us and saying, how much mercy did you show? Now, I got to be telling you, I'm hoping it doesn't always work that way, because I'm going to plead Jesus and ask for grace and mercy. But I want you to ponder this thought for a second. Jesus used this idea that those who have received mercy are those who will show mercy at least twice in Scripture, plus he told a whole big story upon it, to impress upon his disciples. So if we're going to be satisfied in our Christian life, we better be willing to start showing some mercy in our Christian life. And here's the thing. To show mercy, we have to find people that are in need of mercy. Doesn't that make sense? We've got to find people whose lives are broken, busted, and out of kilter, and out of whack. And then we have to pour ourselves into them. Blessed are those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy.